Today's shir is Masech Tanita Daf Yud Ches. We will begin on Daf Yud Zayin Amud Beis, 8 lines from the bottom, Tanya Reb Chiya. To review, we learned the Mishnah towards the end of our shir yesterday that described that in a woman's body there are 3 areas. There's the cheder, otherwise typically called the makar, otherwise called in English the womb. The dam that comes from the makar is tamei. Then there's another chamber called the aliyah. The dam that comes from the aliyah is tohar. And then there's the proizder, the canal, which both of those chambers lead into. Therefore, as the Mishnah already taught us, we have an issue when we find dam in the proizder. We need to know from where it came. Did it come from the cheder or did it come from the aliyah? So the Gemara, if we break it down, and end of the shiur yesterday, the piece of Gemara we learned, actually came up with 4 different opinions about dam found in 2 different areas. And to review, the first was the opinion of Rambam Shmuel and Rav Yitzchak Barei de Yehuda that said that anything that's minalul ulfnim is tamei, misafek, minalul ulchutz is tahar. Rav Huna said minalul ulfnim is vaday tamei, minalul ulchutz is tamei misafek. Abaya, there were 2 versions. The first version was that both areas are tamei misafek. And his final version was that melalul lefnim has a chazok of tamei, it's vaday tamei, and melalul elchutz is tamei because it's tohar because of cheskas tahara. And now the Gemara, just to begin the Gemara, is going to quote a braisa. The braisa mentions 2 opinions, the opinion of Rav Chiya and the opinion of Rav Ketina. And what the Gemara attempts to do is see if how those opinions, these 2 opinions of Tanuim, can be consistent with some or all of the opinions of the Amoraim that I just quoted. It's interesting to note that the Rishonim already ask a question. We're obviously dealing with dam that's found in the Proizder, in the Lul, and we don't know where it's from. Is it from a place that's Tameh, or from a place that's Tahar? Now, Masechta, many times we've discussed, and we will still in Mitzvah Shem discuss, the halacha of that we learn from sight, the Safek Tamim B'Shus HaYochad is Tamei, Safek Tamim B'Shus HaRabim is Tahar. So why don't we just apply that rule to this situation as we've applied it other times as well? So Rishonim answer, when we learn something from sight, that has to be similar to the case of Saita. In Saita, what happened? Where there's a suspicion that this woman had an adulterous relationship with someone else. So the tumah emanates from a relationship between 2 people. It doesn't emanate from the woman herself. When we speak about dam nida, it emanates from the woman herself. And therefore, you can't compare the 2 cases. And since you can't compare the 2 cases, you can't apply the halacha we learn from Hilchas Saita to Hilchas Nida. Another word of introduction is when we speak about a woman being a nida, so we all recognize that what that means is that she may or may not have relations with her husband. But there are other serious repercussions of a woman being tamei or not. One is if she goes into the Beis HaMikdash, does she have to bring a carbon? We know that a woman that goes into Beis HaMikdash, even b'shoygig, b'tuma, anybody, has to bring a carbon. If a person who's tamei, including a nida, touches truma, then the halacha is you have to burn that truma. If it's a suffix, if she was tamei, you can't eat the truma because maybe the truma is tamei, but you can't burn it either because truma that's fine may not be burnt. So we begin the shir. Tanam chia, dam anims beprizda. We have dam in the prizda. Chayovan albiyas migdash. Ruchi's perspective is that this woman is completely tamei. And therefore, if she went into the Beis HaMikdash, she would have to bring a carbon. The Safin Lof is a truma. And if she came in contact with truma, that truma has to be burnt. Rav Ketina Amar, Rav Ketina's opinion is, ein chayav in olah b'yis migdash, ve'ein tzarfen lafsa truma. It's considered a suffix. Then Rav Yehuda asks, gevaldik kasha. He says, obviously the issue that Rav Chiya and Rav Ketina are dealing with is this woman tamei? Is this woman not tamei? So why does this price to speak about truma? And why does the price to speak about beis migdash? Why doesn't the price to speak about a much simpler situation? Is she allowed to or not allowed to have relations with her husband? So it's a very strong question. The answer that's given is that having relations with your husband is a yes or no. There's certainly situations where the truma is tamei. There's certainly situations where the truma is a suffix. So because there are certain situations, we would think that the man da amr who holds that it's a suffix truma would say burn the truma, in order not to get confused with the area where with the time that it must really be burnt. The chiddush of this brisa is that when it's a suffix, we burn it, we don't burn it, and we don't make any gzeiros. So we begin. So these were the two opinions of Rav Chiya and Rav Ketina. So says the Gemara, lach lishna dama baya, ibasa cheshasha azlus, that according to baya, in all situations, whether the dam was found in lulufnim, or whether it was found in lulachutz, it's a suffix and we have to be machmer, but it's a suffix. That says the Gemara is exactly what Rav Ketina said. We always have to be machmer wherever the dam was found. And upligi Rav Chiya, and certainly Rav Huna cannot be consistent with Rav Chiya said. Because Rav Chiya is saying that when it's found lulufnim, it's vadei tamei. According to Abaya's first version, it's only a suffix. Lahach lishna, damrit, according to the final version of Abaya, the amrit, ibos chazaka azlis, that we follow the chazaka, therefore, min alulufnim, it's vadei tamei, min alululuchut, it's vadei tar. That's exactly what Rav Chiya said. Dam hanimtzav prizda. That means if it's lulufnim, you're mamish tamei. Anywhere else, you're mamish tar. Upligid Rav Ketina. And obviously, Rav Abaya's second version cannot be consistent with Rav Ketina says. Rav Huna, according to Rav Huna, who differentiated between lulufnim and lululuchutz, it's also no problem. Not only is it no problem, but we don't even have to have a machlokes of Rav Ketina and Rav Chiya. Kamna lo min alfnim. Abaya speaking by min alul alfnim, that Rav Huna holds his vadei tamei. Kamna lulach, and that's why you have to burn the truma, bring a carbon. Kamna lulachutz, where it's a suffix. And that's what Rav Ketina is talking about. However, ask the Gemara, El Ram Beshmul, Rav Yitzchak Bered of Yehuda. Dama minalo that they said minalola lechutz sveik tar. If it's minalola lechutz, the suffix is tar. It's a suffix. Minalo elufnim sveik tani. Hani b'mayim tukma. How will we explain this price? Because according to them, it's never vadei tamei. Yet both of them say that it is. How will they explain it? Hani b'mayim tukma minalola elufnim. How will either opinion be understood where dam was found in a lululufnim? Lema the pliger of Chiya. There's no way that we could have them be consistent with Rav Chiya. And it's more like Kasha. Which says as follows. Even they who say that in a lululufnim, sveik oitamei, the Gemara now adds a new wrinkle. And it makes a difference where in the lul you found it. If it was found on the floor of the lul, that's when they're machmer. But when it's found on the lul, on the karka halul ulufnim, the mekel. In the gag. Why? Because dam usually is found on the karka when it comes from the mekor, not on the gag. So therefore, even though it's found in a lul ulufnim, the fact that it's on the gag changes everything. And therefore, there they will agree that it's only a suffix, and that's why when it's on the karka, it's tamei vadai. When it's on the gag, it's only tamei misuffik. So Abaya is talking about the gag, karka, that's why he says it's tamei. They were speaking about the gag, And that's why they said it's a Safek. So the obvious question, which all the Rishonim ask, is that the Gemara, in the last line of the Sugya, added a new issue, and that is Gog and Karka. So why hasn't it spoken about it till now? And why is that not an issue according to any of the other Manda Amrim? It's only in this Shitta where the Gemara introduced this as being a factor. So all the Rishonim tried to tackle this issue. The Teretz that they say, they essentially all make the same point. If you look at the other opinions, Rav Huna's opinion, Abaye's two opinions, they're all based on Lamdas. Chazokas, Sveikas, concepts, Lamdasha concepts. This opinion is not based on any Lamdas. It's based on identifying different spots in the woman's body, different areas in the woman's body. So if they're just working based with not a Lamdas, without any logic, just they're saying this part of the body has this rule, this part of the body has this rule, so they have no problem in making new parts or drilling down further and differentiating between the Gog and the Karka. The other ones that are based on Lamdas, there's no room for that type of differentiation. We begin a new sugya. We all know that one of the concepts that's constantly followed in the Torah is the concept of Roif. The Pasuk in the Torah, Acher Rabim Lahafis. And actually, when we think about Roif, there are two types of Roif. There's Ruba the Issa Kamon and Ruba the Leisa Kamon. Ruba the Issa Kamon is a vote. That's what the Torah says, Acher Rabim Lahafis. We have a best and we follow the majority. That's Ruba the Issa Kamon. Ruba the Leisa Kamon is not based on any vote, not based on anybody here at all. It's based on a situation, a fact of life. Meaning, there's a roiv in the Torah, roiv b'iloy sachar ba'al. There's a roiv b'heimus k'sheris. We haven't taken a tally of all the animals. We know that most animals are kosher. We know that most b'ilos are after ba'al. If we think about it, if we try to express it, Ruba the Issa Kamon is a statistic. We took a vote. And the numbers went in one direction. Ruba the Leisa Kamon is not a statistic. It's a lumnus. It's an assumption. And we work with that assumption and paskin halacha. So our Gemara begins to speak about how we look at a roif. And Amar Rav Yochanan, the Shlosh becomes Hokhba Chacham Acha Roif, the Osa Kavadai. There are three places where the Torah give very strong credibility to the roif. So obviously, as we read this line of the Gemara, we're all faced with an issue. Everybody knows, I just quoted a pasuk in the Torah, Acher Rabim Lahafis, that we always follow a roif. So what's Rabbi Yochanan coming to tell me that I follow a roif? That's the din. So the Mefarshim, the Rishonim, take two approaches how to answer. Even if we follow a roif, what happens if there's a chazaka versus that roif? And actually, we're going to speak towards the end of the shir, Etz Hashem, that under certain circumstances, that changes the rules. And these roiv that Rabbi Yochanan is about to address indeed speak to situations where there are chazaka to speak that goes against the roiv. That's one perspective the Rishonim take. Another perspective that the Rishonim take is that sometimes the miut is not just the miut. The miut makes sense. And therefore maybe we should take that miut into consideration. The chiddush of Rabbi Yochanan is that in these cases that have these characteristics, we still completely follow the roif. And the Gemara explains itself. What are the three places? Makar, Shuli, and Chaticha. Makar, Hadamar, the Gemara that we've been learning since yesterday. The dam that's found in the floor of Nim, we treat this woman completely tamei. She has all the dinim of Anida. She can't have relations with her husband. What she's matama must be burned. If she goes into Beis HaMikdash, she has to bring a carbon, even though maybe chulin bazara. Or because we treat her vadai. Now, what's the issue here? First of all, she has a cheskas tara. And second of all, there is blood in a person's body, not only in the makar. To say that the dam that was found in the proizder in the lul is so, we take so for sure, we assume so strongly is dam from the makar, is not a simple roif, yet we follow it. That's one chiddush. Shilya.
What's the case of Shulya? Shulya is the afterbirth. If a woman nevach miscarried and there's afterbirth in the home, the Tanan, Shulya b'bayis. So now the question is obviously, is there a mace in the Shulya? And therefore the house is Tomei, Tumas oil or not? The Tan, the Mishnah says, Shulya b'bayis, b'bayis Tomei. We take for granted that there was a nifel, there was a dead body in this Shulya. V'loisha Shulya v'lad. Not, says the bright Mishnah, that anyone should assume that the Shulya is a Vlad. El she'ein Shulya b'loi Vlad. Every Shulya has to have a Vlad in it, and we assume that there was a Vlad, so where is the Vlad? After it came out, it disintegrated. And the way most Rishonim explain this Gemara is as follows. Rav Shimon agrees also that if there's an afterbirth, there must have been a Vlad. But Rav Shimon says to the Rabbanan, you're so certain that the Shulya came out from the woman's body with the Vlad. And then it disintegrated. I'm not so sure. It might have disintegrated in the woman's body. And by the time it came out, this is very important, since it already came out in this disintegrated form, Rahman al-Tzlan, it becomes bottled in all the other liquids. That means, if it came out independently as a Vlad, and then it disintegrates, so the house is already tummy before it disintegrates. But if it came out already disintegrated, it's bottled and it's not metamah. So he's not arguing that on the concept of ain't shulya b'lo vlad, because it's hard to argue on a fact. Is shulya b'lo vlad or ain't shulya b'lo vlad? Everybody agrees ain't shulya b'lo vlad. He argues that it's not, you can't assume that the vlad disintegrated only after the shulya was expressed from the woman's body. Chaticha, what's the case of chaticha? The Tanan. Hamapel siyat chatucha, the girsa tiny tzan mishnah braisa. Hamapel siyat chatucha v'regel chatucha. If a woman miscarries and what is expressed from her body has fingers, ima tamei leila. She's considered certainly tamei. We've spoken many times. The midaraisa, parashas tazria. If a woman has a boy, she's tamei no matter what for 7 days. And then she's tar no matter what for 33 days. If she has a girl, she's tamei no matter what for 14 days. And she's tar no matter what for 66 days. So now the question is, how do we look at this woman? There are a lot of repercussions. Is she for sure tamei? Does she have to bring kabonis of a yoledis? So the Tanna Kama says that we treat her completely like a yoledis. However, there is one wrinkle. We have to be machmer, because we can't tell if it was a boy or a girl. So she'll be tamei for 14 days, maybe it was a girl. But she'll be tar only for the balance until day 40, because maybe it was a boy, and you only tar to day 40. Why? Because we could assume with a roif that anybody, any miscarriage where it was already so formed, that child is considered enough of a child that would create a tumah yoledes. Interesting shayla that I just saw from Yitzchak Zilberstein discusses in the Cheshukei Chemed. We, unfortunately, cannot bring kabbonis, but we say kabbonis in the Shalom Parnas Hoseinu. Some people say kabbonis every day, Shachris and Mincha. Certainly on Shabbos Yontif, Rosh Chodesh, when we daven, we speak about the kabbonis and not tefillah. So what happens if a woman had a baby, Baruch Hashem? She can't bring a carbon nowadays, but should she say the parashas of kabbonis on day 40 after a boy, or day 41 and after, or day 81 by a girl? So he says, absolutely. Why should it be different than a Shabbos or a Yotav that you say the kabbonis? And he quotes many poskim who say it. The only question he quotes is there's a question who should say it. Because the halacha is that when a woman was a yoledes, her husband had to supply the kabbonis or the money for the kabbonis, and she brought the carbon. So now the question is, who's the one that says the parasha? The husband or the wife? He brings different opinions. And then he discusses a very interesting question. The halacha is that if somebody brought a carbon, the day he brought a carbon was a yontif. He couldn't go to work that day. So what happens if today is day 41 after you had a baby boy, or day 81 or afterwards after you had a girl, and you're saying the parashas are kabbonis, as we just said, is it a yontif that you shouldn't go to work? Says, ask the Gemara of Suleka, other, no other situations where we follow the Rav. Vika, the famous case of Teisha Chanuyos, the Tanya we've learned many times. Teisha Chanuyos, if you have a location that has 10 butcher shops, Kul Marker Basu Shkuta, 9 sell kosher meat. Vachs Meser Cheres Basu Nevelin, 1 sell non kosher meat. Vlokach Maxman, and then you bought meat from one of those butcher shops. Veni, they made men, Vlokach, and you don't know from which one you bought, Sveikos. Because what happened? What happened here was that you walked into a store. You walked into a store, bought meat, and now you forgot which store did you go to, the kosher store or non-kosher store. So even though, as we just read, most of the stores here are kosher stores, there's a concept of called kavua, kemechza mechza. I mean, each store is kavua, and it's always treated kemechza mechza. Where is the source for the din of kol kavua, kemechza mechza? The Gemara Masechta Sanhedrin, Maran Sakta Ksubas discusses it. The Torah says that Kiyaki Ish Yisra'elu V'arvloi V'komloi. That's the parasha of the Isser and the punishment for Achman Tzlan killing someone else. So if Shimon says that the Pasuk is coming to teach us, the Skavim Lahara Gazeh V'har Gazeh, if somebody intended to kill Reuben and he kills Shimon, he's part of them. The Rabbanim disagree. The Rabbanim says the Skavim Lahara Gazeh V'har Gazeh is Chayiv. So what is the Pasuk speaking about? So it says, they say that the Pasuk is speaking about a situation where somebody threw, there's a group of people standing, and somebody threw a stone that could kill into that group, and it indeed killed someone. So now let's think, what is the case that the Pasuk is teaching, that you part of? So what is the case that we're speaking about? If you had a group of 9 people, Akum, and 1 person, a Yisrael, of course you part of. It's a Rav Akum. Even if it's 5 and 5, Safek Nefashis, when it's a question of a Safek Nefashis, we're always Makel. The Torah is coming to teach us that even if there were 9 Yisraelim and 1 Akum, we still Makel. Why? Because it's Kavur. Each one is standing in his place. Kol Kavur Kamechza Mechza Dami. So we look at like a situation of 5 and 5. And as I just said, when it's 5 and 5, it's Safek Nefashis Lakel. So here too, Kavua, here Kavua works in the other direction. That's why we have to assume, we have to be concerned that the meat is not kosher. However, v'nimtza holachach aroiv. If you find a piece of meat on the street and you don't know where the piece of meat came from, then we say call the parish meruba parish, and most of the stores here are kosher, and therefore we can assume that the piece of meat you found is kosher. As Rabbi Naftali Trop explains the difference between the two cases. In the first case, because in both cases, his question is a very simple question. We want to know if you're allowed to eat the meat. So why don't we have the same psak in both cases? He said, because in the first case, we're not talking about the meat. We're talking about the store. We don't know which store you went to. And the stores are kavua. In the second case, we're now looking at a store. We're looking at a piece of meat. There we have called the parsh meruba parsh. There's a question that the Rishonim already discussed. Let's say you indeed have 9 and 1. But the meat was found close to one store. And that store is the Trefa store. Would that influence the halacha? Most Rishonim say that it would. And if it was found right next to the non-kosher store, even though most of the stores in this location are kosher, you can't eat that meat. Very famous machloikis hapoiskim. You have the case that we just discussed. 9 kosher shops, 1 non-kosher shop. But that one non-kosher shop sells more meat than all 9 kosher shops together. So what's the right? Do we follow the stores? Most of the stores are kosher. Or do we follow the meat? Most of the meat here is non-kosher. Some poskim say that, of course, we have to look at the meat. The Sharafrayim, that's the Sharafrayim's approach. Others say no, as we just explained. The question here is on an individual piece of meat, not on the store. And therefore, we could be lenient. Others say we have to look at the amount of meat that was sold that very day. And if most of the meat sold on that day in that location was not kosher, we have to be machmer, otherwise we could be mekel, if most of the stores are kosher. Another interesting shaila that the Rishonim already discussed. Let's say we have a different situation. You have 10 stores in a location, and all 10 are kosher. So there it's not a question if you find a piece of meat, or if you walk into a butcher shop. It doesn't make a difference because everything is kosher. So that's what happened. And then, Rachman al-Islam, it was discovered that one of the stores that was supposedly kosher was selling non-kosher meat. So the assumption now, l'mafreya, falls apart. What is the halacha? Machlokes Ra'ah and the Ran. The Ra'ah is Machmer. He says, you might have had misinformation when you passed in the Shiloh. You passed in the Shiloh right, but it was based on misinformation. And you have to pay now change your psak based on the realities. The Ran says that no. A Shiloh gets kapaskened when the Shiloh comes up. If afterwards the information turned out to be wrong, that doesn't change the psak. Very good finish of the Ran. So again, but here certainly we're following Roif. So why didn't Rabbi Yochanan mention that this case? Answer the Gemara, Tumma Kamirin, Isla Kamirin. He was focused on Hilchus Tumma V'Tahara, not on Hilchus Issa V'Hetter. Ask the Gemara, but there's a case of Tumma V'Tahara that he could have mentioned. V'Tikka, Teshit Tzvadeim. You have nine frogs, which are kosher, they're not kosher, but they're not matama. They're not kosher, they're not matama. V'Sheretz Echad. And there's one sheretz which is matama. V'Sheretz Echad B'Neim. And somebody touched one of them. Very day mem noga, and he doesn't know which one of these 10 creatures did he touch. So he applied the halacha. The b'shusa yochet sofik tamei. B'shusa rabim sofik tamei. That's when it was a kavua. With b'nimtza, where one of them fell out of the group. Then we say halacha haroiv. So why don't we say? And this is already issue of tuma. So why didn't he mention this case? Answers the Gemara. Tuma the isha karminen. So Gemara even qualifies it further. The Rabbi Yochanan was only speaking about Hilchus Tuma, Tumas Isha, not Tuma in general. Ask the Gemara, but this yet another case that he should have mentioned. Vikadam Rishuba Levi of Rabbi Nahor, if a woman was passing through the river, Vipila, and she miscarries, and now again, we don't know for sure, was this a viable child, and it's considered a miscarriage. And all of Hilchus later apply, including bringing kabbonis. Mevi'a karba v'necha. So as the Rishonim explained, the halacha is that a woman who's a yoledes has to bring a karban oil and a karban chatas. But the karban chatas she could bring, we'll speak about this more in the next parak, could be a chatas oif. So even though normally, as we've discussed, particularly in Masechta Kinim, you can't bring a karban chatas on a suffolk, because it would be a question of chulin ba'azara. That's only when it's a behemoth. But when it's an oif, that rule doesn't apply. And you could bring a karma chatas oif on a suffolk, because you can't eat it. The oil you don't eat anyway. And the oil is not a problem anyway. Because the oil, as we've learned many times, you could bring and make it tonight. If I'm a yoledes and I'm a chuyiv in the carbon oil, great. If I'm not a yoledes and I'm not a chuyiv in the carbon, so then I'm bringing it as a nadova. The oil you can bring as a nadova. But a chatas you could only bring if you're obligated to bring it. So here you're okay, because since it's a chatas oif, you could bring it even if it's an issue of chul v'azara. The chiddush of this mishnah, of this Rabbi Shuva Levi, is that you could even eat it. So what does that mean? That we're taking the roiv, that most women that miscarry a child that would cause tumas later, that you could bring the carbon and eat it. So we see that we follow roiv. Halachach roiv noshim, roiv noshim vlad, Ma'al Yalden. So why didn't Rabbi Yochanan mention this case? Answers the Gemara. Masnisa Kamina Shmatzla Kamina. We're only speaking about cases that are mentioned in Mishnais or Brises. This was mentioned by Rabbi Shuma Levi. Rabbi Shuma Levi is not a Mishnah or a Brisa. The Rishonim ask that we do find that Rabbi Shuma Levi is considered a Tana. So I saw two answers. One answer is there were two Rabbi Shuma Levis. One was a Tana, one was an Amira. This is the Amira. Another Tara says Rabbi Shuma Levi is like Rav. He was from the last of the Tanom and from the earliest of the Maroim. And this, the Gemara is saying, was said when he was already an Amira. Ask the Gemara, how can we say that this halacha was only taught as an Amira because of an Amir Masa Rabbi Yossi by Rav Chanina? Ta. V'lo yodarim ma'ati yofta. I brought a braisa that contradicted Rabbi Shuv Ben Levi's opinion, but I'm not sure why it contradicts it. My love, what does he not mean to say? Loiti yufta, that the braisa is not a question, el siyata. But what's the question that the Gemara is making? The point of the Gemara is that we obviously see that the braisa is addressing this issue. So why are you saying that this is an issue that is only addressed by an amoira, not by a braisa? The fact that the Gemara now is assuming that there was a braisa that corroborates this psak is a raya that's addressed by a braisa. That's not what he meant. What he meant to say was that the braisa was talking about something else. And it's not a question, and it's not a raya, and we don't have any braisa. It remains Rabbi Shuma Levi's psak. And since it remains Rabbi Shuma Levi's psak, that's why Rabbi Yochanan didn't mention it, because Rabbi Yochanan was only speaking about Mishnayos and braisas, not what I'm going to run. There's a Ramah. The Ramah says that, let's say, a woman had a miscarriage, called to Marik, Rik Sarishan. The Ramah says, if a woman had a miscarriage, and she doesn't know if the child was a viable fetus in any way, and then Baruch Hashem, she has another healthy child, and it's a boy, this boy should be treated as a bechor and have a pidyon. So some Seifer says he doesn't understand. Al Gemara just said that Roiv Hapolis, most miscarriages were from a real lady. Al Gemara just quoted a Shiva lady that said that the woman would have to bring a carbon and would be Chulu Bazar. And therefore, the Chassam Seifer, and this is the Psak of the Chacham Tzvi, the Shulz Yaakov, say that the Ramah is only speaking about a case where expert doctors told this woman that the fetus that she miscarried, Rahman Slan, was totally not formed. The halacha is called Merukim. But in a case where they don't know what its status was, we have the halacha of Al Gemara that we can't treat that child as a Bechor. Chassam Seifer says that if someone wants, he can make opinion of Ben L'chumra. But Ben L'chumra means that if you give the money to the Kayin, if you want to give your money to the Kayin, you can give it. If the Kayin wants to give it back, it's fine. But you shouldn't make a bracha. By opinion of Ben, we actually make two brachas. We make a bracha on the pidyon, and we make a shachyanu. So says the bracha on the pidyon should not be made. A shachyanu, the Kayin should buy himself a new suit and make a shachyanu. Says the Gemara. L'mutimai. So we go back to Rabbi Yochanan's statement. Rabbi Yochanan began the Suda with a statement that in these three situations, we treat the Roiv very seriously. So obviously what Rabbi Yochanan is trying to teach us, and we alluded to this when we started the Suda, is to say that in these situations, I'm going to take the Roiv very seriously. There must be a situation where he won't take the Roiv that seriously. What is the case? L'mutei mai. Ilamuta. That if there's a roiv that has a strong chazaka against it, that there we won't rely on the roiv, says the Gemara, for Rabbi Yochanan Chadazimna. That's a halacha that we already learned. That's not. The Mishnah says, Tinak hanimtza b'tzadi isa. If a tinak is next to a dough, ubatzik b'yodai, and he's holding a piece of dough, Reb Meir says that dough is fine. The Chama Metamei, and the Chama hold it's tummy. Shadaka Shatinak Letapeach. The Chodesh Rashi and Tosfos how to understand. I'm going to quote both opinions, but we're going to learn with Rashi. Rashi says that the Chachamim hold that Tinoikis play in the Ashba, Tinoikis play in the garbage dump, and in the garbage dump there are always Shrotzim. We spoke about Shrotzim and Amud Aleph that are Metamei the Tinoikis. Tosfos says the reason that the Chacham assumed that a tinek is tamei is because a tinek gets hugged and touched by his mother, who's a nida. Vaminan, and in understanding this machlokes, my tamei Rameya, k'sav roiv tinekus v'tapchim. We do have, in fact, this roiv that tinekus typically play with shrotzim. However, there is a miyat eimetapchim. V'sisuzu b'cheskes tahara medes, and this dough also has a cheskes tahara. So we combine the miut and the chazaka, Israel Ruba, we don't have to follow the roif. and this is very consistent for Ramei with Shitasai, because throughout Shas, Ramei is the Madom that says Cheshina Lamiuta, so he gives Miut a lot of credence. Rabbanon, Mutah to command the Leis Dami. The Rabbanon hold that a Miut is ignored. The Rabbanon don't agree with Ramei. They don't give so much. They're not Cheshina Lamiuta. So now we have a situation of a Ruba versus a Chazaka. We have the Roy of Tinaikas Metapchim. We have the Chazaka of Tahara on the dough, and they pass the Ruba on it. Vomer Shlokish, Mishim Rabbisha. Zui Chazaka Shasafan Lasa Truma. This Chazaka is so strong that we treat the Truma like it's Mamish Tamei. The Roy that says that Roy of Tinaikas Tanat Metapchim, and based on that Roy, we consider the stole tamei. It's tamei to the degree that we're the stole truma. We would have to burn it because it's tamei to get truma. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, ain't zu chazaka shesar from the truma. They're not ready to give. He's not ready to give the truma that chazaka so much. That roi so much power. So we already see that Rabbi Yochanan had taught us that that roi is not just a strong roi. So if Rabbi Yochanan, when he began this sugya, wanted to say these cases to exclude another case, this is not the case that he meant to speak about. He already spoke about it once. What is the case? He speaks about this case. That's not, we learned in the Mishnah, we're going to learn it soon, Hamapel Statikha. If some woman has a miscarriage, Im Yesh Imo Dam, if there's Dam that comes out with that Tameh, with that miscarriage, she's Tameh. Last behavior. But you don't know, even if we don't see Dam, she's talking. Ben kach to me. The Amr of Yehuda Mishmul. Loitim Rabbi Yehuda. El b'chatikha sh'avim min Adam. We're going to learn, Mitzvashem, next year, that not all Dam, the different shades of Dam, the different colors that are Tomei, the different that are Tor. Loitim Rabbi Yehuda. El b'chatikha sh'avim min Adam. This, that, he said that it's Tomei. When Dan came out, it's only if it's one of those colors that we're going to learn R and D Tomei. Al Shamin and Tahara, but other meaning of Dan, even though it was Dan, the woman would still eat Tahara. Rav Yochanan Amar, Shal Abin meaning Dam, if the color of Dan that came out in this miscarriage was one of the colors that is always Tomei, the Reakot Tomei, there's no Machlokes. Everybody will hold its Tomei. Vishar Damin, if it's one of the other colors, the Rehakel is also no Machlokes. Everybody will agree that she's Tahora. We don't know what happened. We don't know. Did one of these dam, the dam come out? And what color dam came out? Rabbi Yehuda was Zilbos Roy Chatichas. Rabbi Yehuda says we follow most Chatichas. The Roy Chatichas Shlamim is Dam Mahavi. And we can rely on that Roy to treat this woman like she's Mamish Tamid. We don't follow the roif. This is a case where we have a roif. The roif woman, when they miscarry, the mapla chaticha with one of the bad colored dam, bad meaning tummy colored dam, and yet they don't say we should follow the roif, and we're not ready to make the woman tummy. That's the case where we don't follow roif. That Rabbi Huda wanted to exclude.